do you do when the child you raised, the one you called Bailey Boo, disappears right in front of your eyes? Not because she left, but because she was stolen by an addiction that turned your world into a cycle of missed calls, social media welfare checks, and the unthinkable task of planning a funeral in your head while she was still alive. Today on the podcast, we're joined by Bernadette McConnell. Bernadette is a mother, a partner, and a community carer who spent nearly a decade in the trenches of her daughter Bailey's addiction to cocaine and street drugs. This just isn't a story about the addict. It's a story about the mammies and daddies who suffer in the shadows. It's about the crushing weight of enabling, the moment you realise you have to be cruel to be kind, and the absolute failure of a mental health system that closes its doors when the people are at the most vulnerable. But above all, it's a story of survival. Bailey is now 14 months into recovery, proving that even after trauma and the darkness of the graveyard in Strabane, healing is possible. Our guest today, as I mentioned, Bernadette O'Connell. Thank you so much for joining us, Bernadette. It really is a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
You're very welcome, Greg.
And it's, I think it's incredibly brave, and I'm sure you hear that all the time, and I mean it genuinely as a parent. I don't mean it in that sort of patronising, you know, just saying you're an inspiration way. It really is a remarkable thing you're doing, I think.
Well, it's a story that has to be told, Greg. And thankfully, we have a good ending so far, and long may continue with my daughter in recovery. But there's so many here in Strabane, where I'm living, that doesn't have the same ending. If you walk around that graveyard down there, there's so many young people at 23 years of age that's gone. And it's so sad, Greg.
Yeah.
It really is so sad.
And sometimes, you know, and I think your daughter has been incredibly lucky with those around her. Not everyone has that. And so many lives lost, so many lives unfulfilled, because of a serious lack of sort of supports for people with addiction.
That I wanted to make everybody very aware that when Bailey was getting street drugs, as I call it, in Grantia, you can get street drugs in Asha as well when you're in, you know, the rehabilitation centre. There is no hiding place from them, Greg. They're available everywhere, right? They're nowhere safe for them. And whenever that she had tried to unalive herself and we got her down into the A&E, from that on then everything went crazy. And that's when I realised, you know what, I'm on my own here.
Yeah. And I think it might be helpful for us to go through that story. But just in terms of the supports that there. Do you think because there's this stigma of drug addiction that it's easy for governments in London, in Belfast or to Dublin or in Dublin not to put the money in? Because, you know, there is this sense that it's all your own fault. There's no reason for it. It's a lifestyle choice. You're making that decision. You're from a bad family. All misconceptions. But do you think sometimes governments can use that to sort of divert funds somewhere else?
I think, what you're saying is right as well. There is a huge stigma attached, and I know only too well, drugs doesn't have a class, Greg. From, like I said in that last podcast, if you're in that beautiful house in the Hull, okay, on a housing estate like I'm in, it does not matter. Drugs get in your door regardless. And I think it goes the whole way to the top. And cocaine now is used everywhere.
If we go back to your daughter's story, does it really start, you're very much of the view it was triggered by a traumatic incident. Is it your view that this whole journey began when your daughter, when Bailey was 13?
In my story and in our lives, and I only can speak for us, I do believe that it might not have been as bad only for what Bailey had went through. And I do believe that a lot of addicts have got a lot of trauma in their lives. That's my only my opinion, Greg, that I believe that stems from a lot of trauma. But I'm sure there are people out there who think, oh, well, you know, once they start them, But when you look at it, we all tried cigarettes back in the day. Nobody realized how bad they were, until you're actually hooked on them.
And do you know what else we managed to do? We managed to conceal it from everybody. And this was something with an odor that you required money for. I remember back in my teens, you knew how to hide it because you knew what was coming if your parents found out.
So if they're nothing nowadays, it's not cigarettes, it's drugs. And they're so easy available, Greg.
When did Bailey start taking drugs? Or it's funny, you're talking about smoke, and I can actually remember the very first time where I was. I'm not saying I didn't make the decision, right? But I can remember the conversation. This is a long time ago. We were on a couple of bikes on the old Lahey Road, and it was like just a couple of puffs or whatever it might be. And eventually, I can remember actually buying my first box of cigarettes because I had to have those cigarettes, right? I don't know how much time passed, but. Are you and Bailey able to identify that moment that really was the first step on the rung of the ladder of addiction?
No, I think she dabbled a wee lot in her teens of at everything, like all of them did. And I think then that she realized then, I think this cocaine then was kind of going, oh God, this is good stuff, right? We'll try this. And that's when she become addicted to it then. In her 20s was whenever she got really addicted to the cocaine.
And for how long do you think she was using drugs extensively without your knowledge? I talked a little earlier on of examples of how we can be really quite deceptive if we want to be.
She was they're very, very cute. Anybody that's in addictions, and they hide it well. One of their best things they do is lie as well. They lie a wee lot, Greg. You can't trust anything that comes out of somebody's mouth if they're in addictions, and that's my case, my story. I couldn't trust her. I felt anything she said was lies. I would say she was doing it maybe 3 years before I realized that she has a problem here. They're a big problem here.
And in that period of time, so what age might she have been then? Because she was dabbling
Early
in
20s,
early
early
20s.
20s.
So your Bailey Boo, as you affectionately call her, at what point now, maybe even looking back, do you feel you lost the essence of her to drugs?
The minute that I discovered she was on them, because that's when I copped on that her whole personality had changed completely. The girl that she was, the trustworthy wee girl that she was, the loving, the caring, all that she was disappeared. And I suppose it's from 23, possibly 22, up to she's in recovery now, 14 months, so up to she was 29, I lost her, completely lost her.
Wow. But okay, I'll get to what I was going to ask you a little later on. Physically, could you see in her early 20s the physical toll that drugs were taking on her? And I wonder maybe because of trauma in her life, and trauma's not fleeting, right? Trauma can stay with us to the grave. Physically, did you notice a change in her, and how did that present itself?
A lot thinner, very slim, not looking after her appearance anymore. No care for her appearance for a girl of that age should be in the beautiful long brown hair. And she should have been doing more with her makeup and her hair and her tan. That was all forgotten. Didn't care. Did not care. About clothes, didn't care about herself, didn't care about her family, didn't care about anything other than cocaine.
Yeah. But was it escapism for her, do you think? Or would that be just a way of explaining it away? Was she trying to seek an escape from the realities?
I think, I do believe in her case it was. Now, not to say that if that thing didn't happen to Bailey, maybe she might have went down that path as well, but I do believe that it had a lot to do with it, because even at school after, and I'm not going to delve into what did happen to her, she was bullied at school because of that thing. So it had a huge impact on her life, Greg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, indeed.
So I can imagine her wanting to escape.
Well, of course, because, listen, we're constantly talking about the pressures on young people now with, you know, school bullying. But now you can get bullied outside of school, of course, with social media and what have you. And, you know, it's very hard. And a lot of the time they feel they have to deal with it on their own. And a lot of the time we find out about it when it is too late, when they're no longer with us. I think a lot of people will be able to relate to exactly what you're talking about. Her behavior whilst taking drugs, you know, presumably she was a functioning drug addict, not in the room all of the time. What were the signs of her drug taking, I suppose, in terms of behavior or, you know?
Her behavior, mannerisms, everything changes. And once I was aware of it, I was so aware of it. It's like it's staring you in the face and I'm kind of going, how did I not see that sooner? You know, but you're not looking for it, Greg. And I'm not a professional. I'm only a mammy. And I'm not looking for any signs until it got really that I could not see what was going on. Whenever it's the personality change, as the quickness in her attitude or chatting back, has been very disrespectful to me when she wasn't that type of child anyway. You know, she got very disrespectful, very, very cheeky. Everything was turned around. It was blamed on me. I got the worst word in her mouth. And this was a constant battle of rows all the time in the house with her.
And between the ages of, let's just say, for to pick a timeline, 22 to 29, where you said a little earlier on that you lost your daughter, did you literally lose contact with her, or did you lose the daughter that you raised?
I lost the daughter that I raised. I lost Bailey Boo, and I would have no qualms in saying that I hate it, absolutely hate it, the addictions, the addict. Because they were destroying my wee girl that I gave birth to. And a lot of parents will relate to that because it took me a long time to figure that out. Greg, you know that there were two different people here we're chatting about. And she was killing my wee Bailey Boo. And anybody that's going to kill your wee child, Greg, you're going to hit them.
Yeah.
You're going to hit them.
I mean, you never give up on your children, right? But did there come a point whereby you say, I'm going to have to be the best mum I can to this person, even almost to a point where you're enabling the situation, not in any sort of in a manner that you were doing it intentionally at the time, but on reflection?
All parents enable. All parents of anybody with addictions will enable. Because when she's out partying and gone for days on end, and I'm checking to see when she was last active on her socials to see if she's still alive, I have a lovely warm bed for her to come back to. I have fresh clothes washed and dried for her. I have a lovely warm meal on the table for her. That's all enabling her. I paid off a huge debt to the drug for drugs. As well, which is enabling her. I didn't let her be responsible for her own actions, Greg. I enabled her so much over the years that on Christmas Day, when I sat here on my own at the table, I broke down and cried after I'd pulled her out of a flat the night before, kicked the door down to get her, bring her home to keep her safe. But that was me looking after myself the way that I would be all right, knowing where she was on Christmas Day. But I was enabling her because I was bringing her home to a lovely, warm environment. I didn't let her lie in the circumstances that she created herself.
Yeah. Just in relation to settling that debt, was that under threat to either her or yourself? It's just something that you felt you needed to do.
I needed to do.
Also, too, you have to consider the fact that the drugs could take her. Did that play on your mind?
120 million% it played on my mind. I had her funeral planned in my head, was taking fake pregabalin, He took five seizures, fake, forget them, that you can buy. She could have died in any one of them seizures, any of them. She could have died by taking snorting cocaine because it could have had, it could have been laced with rat poison or anything, Greg.
Yeah.
The minute your child takes any of them substances, they are dicing with death. So I've always been very, very aware that I was going to get a phone call someday to say that she was found dead. And many a mother here in Strabane has got that phone call.
Yeah. And I presume, as you mentioned, in fact, I don't have to presume because you said it this time, she just goes off the radar completely and you don't know if she's lying somewhere with something up her nose in the corner of a room and no one there, or if she's just going to land any moment.
Yeah, you don't know. You don't know. And only for the grace of God, she's here with us and she is determined to keep going, Greg. Mm. You know, she's got a really good vision now and she's going for it this time, big time, and long may that continue.
I think you really kind of got the ball rolling in relation to that. I think you talked there about kicking the door down and find Bailey in an awful state, which must have been absolutely terrible for you. This was around Christmas time as well.
This was Christmas, yeah, Christmas Eve.
Yeah. Was that the starting point of the road to recovery?
Yeah, because it was Christmas Eve and I brought her over here. That was a big wake-up call for me. One of my realizations was that if I keep enabling her, me and her are both going to be dead here. None of us is going to come out of this alive. So somebody has to do something. So I had to change my mindset, Greg. And the way that I only can describe it in layman's terms, because I'm only just a normal wee mammy here, was that every time I'd done something or give her electric or give her food, it was like handing her a 50-pound bag of cocaine. And that's what I had to get into my head. Every time I'd done that, I was enabling her. I was helping her to do drugs. And once you change that mindset, for me it worked, and it worked for Bailey. When I stopped enabling Bailey, she woke up and realised, oh my God.
But that was like almost a detox in and of itself, because you really had to be tough on that. If you said, right, no to this, no to that, no to the other, there's going to be pushback there. That realisation that, okay, right, I need to do something, that doesn't happen straight away. So how long was that window?
That window went on for, I think, maybe a year and a half to 2 years before, maybe less. It wasn't wild long. But, Greg, you get lost in the whole thing that you don't know what day of the week it is.
Yeah.
And you're, I think she realised, because I kept saying no, and that's wild hard to say to your own child, no. And I had to keep consistent all the time. It was wearing me down. I wasn't eating. I wasn't sleeping. I was like a zombie. But I kept going, because by God, this is not going to kill us. I'm going to, you know, there were that wee fight in me that I'm going to do something here and we have to do it. And if this is the last chance saloon, then let it be. But I'm going to go down with a fight. If that makes sense to you.
No, 100% Greg. It does. And, you know, when you were withholding, there'd be the emotional blackmail there as well. You're killing me, or you're going to kill me, or I'll kill myself. Or...
Yeah, 100%. Emotional, mental, you name it. I got the worst word in her mouth. I got it. It was me. And that was all right. I took it. I was big enough and ugly enough to give it to me. Give me what you feel. But you're still not getting it.
Was she under your roof at that time?
No. Whenever I stopped enabling, she was out.
Yeah.
She was out on her own. And that was allowing me a wee bit of breather too, because, like I said, I'm here in the community and I desperately needed sleep. I needed normality.
Well, you could only stretch yourself so far. I mean, if you're going to care for someone, especially this high level, high emotional care, you have to look after yourself, or you go 100%. Down and then your daughter doesn't have anyone with her. So from that Christmas...
100%, Greg. That's it. That's it. That's it in a nutshell. That's it.
Mm. And I'm not looking for specific timelines, by the way, because as you say, everything can be a blur. But if that starting point was Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, and then a period of time, was it completely drugs free? Some drugs, highs and lows?
There would be highs and lows. And it was after that time when I stopped enabling too that she tried to unalive herself. And that's when we went in and went to the A&E. I went down the next day to get her out, and I wanted her to go into Grantia. I did not want her to go to Grantia because I felt that they give her more medication and she'd come out addicted to prescribed medication as well as the cocaine now that we have.
It was only going to work if she had nothing in her system, really, effectively, not one thing replacing another.
Yeah. And it wasn't the place for her either. And then I come home and rang a doctor. The doctor couldn't see her. The mental health team couldn't see her because she was actively using. The back to the psychiatrist and the doctors, they couldn't see her either. 6 weeks waiting list. Quorum Centre was of help to me to support me.
But in relation to that, not to cut across you, I don't mean to, but this is a really important part of this story, I think, as well, because everything that you and your daughter have gone through, and there's other people who aren't on this conversation that I'm sure were affected as well. You have got to a point whereby you've hit the lowest of the low. You've dragged your daughter out of this building on a Christmas Eve. She's attempted to take her own life. But now she's with you to some extent whereby she's on the same page with you about a recovery. So then you start saying, yep, right, I've got this girl here now. She's prepared, yep, to do what's necessary. What's there for us? And what you're greeted with is, here, but you're concerned about drug availability there, waiting lists there, and you're going, where's the help? Where is the help? Yeah. And what happens if this help doesn't come?
Yeah, and like that day, I was sitting out in my backyard, and we're going from A to B to C. Go back to A again, Greg. Go back to B again. Go right. It was going round in circles. Nobody wanted to know. And then I rang Lifeline. I don't know if you're aware of that.
Yeah.
Called Lifeline, like Samaritans. Lifeline. And Lifeline turned around and told me that, oh, she's category A, B, or C. I can't remember the category. And I went, what does that mean? And the fellow on the phone told me she was too vulnerable to talk to.
Mm. How does that make sense, you know?
You might as well kick me in the stomach that day. And I just looked and I got really angry. And I said on the phone to them, well, that's all right. See, when Bailey kills herself, I'll get back to you again. And I hung up and I sat down and I cried and I cried because I did not know, Greg, what to do.
You felt defeated in that moment.
I was pulling my hair out. Here was a wee girl desperate. And now remember, this is my wee boo. There are always somebody's wee boo out there, Greg. You have an affectionate name, I would say, for your children too. We all do, you know, and that'll stick with them into their adulthood, what you call them. And here's my wee boo, and nobody wants to help me. Nobody.
Yeah. And it is helping you too. It's not just her as well. Let's not forget as well, because the role of family is and supports for family, I think, is critical in this stage. So then where did she manage to get into then, and at what stage was that?
Yeah.
Because you have your reservations about certain places and the availability of drugs or the treatment programs. It works for some people, right? These places have successes. But for you and your situation and for Bailey's situation, it wasn't working for you. So you were told 6 weeks, 8 weeks, nothing available. She's too sick for us to see her. When was there a positive breakthrough then?
Bailey pushed and pushed it herself. I have to give her credit here where credit is due. She wanted off them. She did not want, because she realized that if she continued to do what she was doing, she was going to lose her mammy. And her mammy is her world. As my children are my world, she thinks the world of her mammy. And to leave, for me to leave her, I would have just had to walk away and leave, and love her from afar. Because I couldn't be in that whirlwind with her. And she was devastated about that. So she stopped doing stuff. She got in contact with the, what was it, down in Asha. And I think you have to be clean. I can't remember now, so I can't do this right with you. But you have to be clean a certain wee while. And because she was on that program already, and Asha, she got into it again. And she had left there on good terms and was a good inmate, for want of a better word, she was in there.
Yeah.
So she got herself in there for the second time.
And I think what was critical in there, they seemingly gave her a target, something she could say, right, that's a date, that's something I'm determined, I can get to that.
Yeah, 4 weeks she stayed in there. 4 weeks. And when she came out, she was a changed girl.
There was
she wanted it, Greg. She wanted it.
Yeah. You see, that's the thing, and there might be people listening to this saying, yeah, and we don't always get those moments, you know, those breakthrough moments, those lows when you hit rock bottom, because some of the drugs that she was taking, lots of people don't get the second chance. They don't hit rock bottom and then say, right, they're gone.
No.
You know, no. Unfortunately.
For the grace of God, she's still here. For the grace of God.
And there was during the last day you referenced, there was a moment during that stay, wasn't there, where maybe she had access to drugs, and there was a pivotal moment there. Was it for you and for her where she says, right, do you know what, maybe I've got the beating of this, or you said, do you know what, you know, Bailey, you've got this.
The second time that she was in, and when there was somebody was bringing in stuff, and she was telling me on the phone, where we nightly phone call, that she alerted somebody, a staff member. And I thought, fair play to you, Bailey. This is great. This is great. I seen a movement in her, and I seen a difference in her attitude. And she was quoting things, and she was coming round to be the wee intelligent wee girl that she was again, Greg. You know, you could see Bailey Boo coming back into me again. Even within 4 weeks, made a huge difference to her, you know. And she was very positive. And I did turn around to my partner then too, and me and her have talked about this then, and says, I think that was the moment that I knew, you have got this, girl, you have got this.
Mm.
Her mindset was different.
How important was your partner for yourself as well? I know this is a sort of about Bailey and her journey and a parent's journey as well, but I mean, you needed some amazing supports during these times as well.
My partner has been an amazing man. I thank him for it every day, as does Bailey. He was able to take a step back and let me, Greg, do whatever I needed to do as a mammy. My parents as well, Bailey's grandparents, and both her aunts, both my sisters, has been amazing. And there are a few friends of Bailey's as well that has been absolutely amazing, that have stood by us and kept me going by just saying, you're doing it all right, you're doing okay, you're doing the right thing here. Mm. And you need that wee bit of somebody telling you, you're doing all right, Greg, you know, you're doing okay. That made me spur me on, you know, because Bailey's father's passed away. So it's just me and my partner of 14 years. And only for that wee group that I had, I don't know if I'd be able to come on here and be as brave talking.
Talking about groups and friendships and what have you, I mean, obviously, right, Bailey's going to be drawn to certain people, certain friends groups during the most of her 20s when she was suffering with this addiction. Did she have to cut ties with a lot of people?
No. She knows, and we call them triggers, and people that would trigger, she doesn't go near them. So she has dropped a lot of friends. Her good friends are still there.
Oh, that's good.
Her day dot is still there.
Yeah, they're able to welcome her home as well. So you talked about, did Bailey Boo come out of Asha then? I don't want to sort of glamorize it, because I know it's an ongoing journey, right? But
100%.
Would she return to you after that second stint, do you feel?
I do. I think her wee vulnerable and vulnerableness was there, the wee person that I knew was, I could see her again. We're 14 months in, and over 14 months on, and she's on step four as well. And the trusting is getting there. It's just not full on, Greg, with me. It's going to take a wee while longer, but it's there. It's very, very much there. And I can see her personality. I think the minute that she walked out of Asha, I could see my wee boo again.
Do you know the funny thing is though, you talk about the trust not being really there. I think so, either consciously or subconsciously, I think that's to protect both of you in a way, you know, because maybe you were too trusting, and this is no way to put any blame on you at all. But you know, for those few years where she was able to conceal it from you, you have to say, once bitten, twice shy. I'm going to make sure you can't do that again.
100%, 100%, Greg, you're right. If there were one day there not that long ago that she lay on in bed, and one part of her recovery is up early. Routine is vital as well. And there were one of the days that she had an old dose too on her, and by 10 o'clock I wasn't getting anything back, and I was panicking. There were no texts. I'm out working again. And that deja vu, that horrible feeling came over me. And then she rang, "Oh, I'm so sorry, Mum. I'm so sorry. I slept in. I'm so sorry." And I said, "That's all right. That's all right." But I just, you know, that it just come back to me like that, Greg, that you're going.
In a way, that's, you know, your trauma too. You're traumatized, right? You know, that's triggered dormant emotions in you, hasn't it? Which is perfectly normal. Life is tough, though. And, you know, sometimes maybe a test of a recovery is how we deal with traumatic instances. And there have been tests of Bailey, and she has passed them with flying colours.
She has. She's had the big one was when her best friend had died under horrific circumstances here in Strabane. And the two of them were very, very, very close. And when he passed away, I was praying to God not to let her go back to her old ways again. And she didn't, Greg. She actually took it and she run with it. And she thinks that I believe her friend has given her so much from up there. If you believe in that, and I have good faith that he is behind her 100% in her recovery, and she is going from strength to strength.
The one thing you've been you've pointed out a number of times through this conversation is and recognizing that other parents, other guardians, other families, other friends group haven't got the same story. And even over the period of your daughter's addiction, so many young lives lost. And you get that, don't you? You understand exactly what those parents are going through, even though Bailey's still with you.
Greg, I know I shared on my wee platform there that I do the TikToks that I put up that I was going out for the day with Bailey, because we were doing a year anniversary for her to be clean. And we were doing something special as a mother and a daughter. And that's something that you miss out on when they're addictions. You don't do them wee normal things anymore. And I put it up, and the reaction that I got was crazy with many people. And the lady from Belfast texted me and said that she was so proud of my daughter Bailey, and long may it continue, and she wished me all the best, and that she had buried her own 23-year-old daughter last week. Mm. And the many messages I got after that, Greg, my daughter, my son, my niece, my nephew, my grandchild passed away, and it was all around 22, 23. Yep, yep. Mm-hmm. It seems to be, for whatever reason. And I'm so grateful. I am so, so grateful that Bailey's still here. And if something did happen to her, maybe in a few years down the line, I probably would have come on and been doing a different story. But there is light at the end of the tunnel. And look, there's one person that can do it. Surely there are others out there that can do it too, Greg. Surely.
Yeah, but we're almost going back to the very start. I think as a society, we also have a responsibility here to understand. I mean, your story is completely relatable. It's so, you know, it could happen to any of us. I don't care how good a parent you are or what you think or how judgy you are. This could come to any of our doors. And you will see, you'll see comments on social media. They had it coming, scumbag. You know, all these usual words. And we don't step back and go, right, okay. Do we have a responsibility as a society here not to be so judgmental and to see this as a disease or as an illness?
Oh, yeah. It is an illness. Nobody, Greg, wants to die at 23 years of age. They want to live their lives. It's an addiction. Addiction is an illness. And whether it be that they started the first cigarette and it continued on, or the first drink, all of us have done that, Greg. It's how then, and maybe you have a personality of addictions, or I don't know what it is, or your makeup or your whatever, but these children are dying. Our children are dying. And people look at them, and that is something that I wanted to get through as just a normal wee mammy, just a care in the community. I'm nothing big, I'm just a normal person, like I'm saying. This is my story of how I dealt with her addiction. But she's my wee boo. Anybody you see out there is somebody's wee boo. They have a mammy and daddy and grandparents and aunts and uncles that love them. They don't ask to be lying in the street the way they are. Nobody wants to die at 23, Greg. You know, and people need to change their attitude towards them. Because it affects everybody. Like you say, it doesn't matter if you're a solicitor or a carer's daughter, does not matter.
And supports, again, need to be there as well. Again, you know, sometimes the most critical thinkers or people that think outside the box or anti-establishment, they criticise groups of individuals rather than actually turning their anger or frustration to the people that make the decisions. So, you know, if you feel like, you know, slagging someone off or being nasty to someone on social media, maybe you should direct that attention at your local elected representative and saying, what are we doing about education in schools? What are we doing about, you know, walk-in treatment centres? What are we doing to stop people jumping off bridges, self-harming? You know, those, and ask of the people that actually make those decisions, not the victim potentially of the absence of those decisions.
Yeah, because I don't know what it's like. I'm from Donegal originally, but living in Strabane. But they're going to build another bridge in Strabane. Greg, why don't they put that money into something, you know? Like I say, I'm only a normal, my wee voice isn't going to be heard because I'm just a normal person. But to me, I think it's ridiculous with the amount. All you have to do is walk around the graveyards in Strabane to see the young people that stay.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure Letterkenny is probably the same.
Oh, yeah. 99, 2003, 2008. It's terrible. It's instead of us making improvements, it seems that drugs are becoming more and more accessible. And we're starting to see even more potent drugs coming in to the system. Yeah. How angry are you at those who peddle the drugs and make money from the drugs? I mean, they potentially took your daughter from you.
Yeah, but the way I would look at that, Greg, is there's no point in me being angry with them, because that's taking away energy that I can use for my daughter. And we're never, ever going to change anybody that's selling drugs. That's not going to happen. It's not. Excuse me. You're banging your head off a brick wall because there's too much money, excuse me, being made in this world with drugs, Greg. And it's not going to change. What we have to do is educate your child from day dot. Even in the womb, I would be, if I was a case now, if I would not, that I'd ever be pregnant again now, Greg. Like, but if it ever happened, you'd be, say no to drugs, say no to drugs, say no to drugs. Have that. They're starting child sex education very young. Start saying no to drugs at a very young age.
Drugs kills. Drugs and drugs you don't.
Drugs will kill you, and will kill your family.
Yeah, indeed. 14 months in now, as you say, you're cautiously optimistic, which I think it's important for you as well, right? You have to protect yourself as well. But yes, there's light at the end of the tunnel. It isn't a big steam train, is it? You can sort of see a pathway out for your daughter. Yeah. She's well on that path, but, you know.
She's well on the path. And even I did mention about her wee dog died in her arms on New Year's Day. And yet again, as a parent, I'm going, oh, my God, I hope this doesn't, you know, because it's a family dog. And no, she was she was positive. We both have a fantastic trip lined up here next month now to go to my son. And she would never have been able to do that before, Greg. There are huge things there and possibilities because I have my daughter back again. And me and her are friends again. And we can go traveling together again and do our wee bits. And it's lovely. And if things changed again, I don't even want to think about that. I have to keep positive at all times, Greg.
Mm-hmm.
You know, keep positive.
I think that's important. I think you have to live in the here and now and what we have control over. You know, it would be awful if you lost this positive time that you have thinking about what could happen. Now is the moment to ensure it doesn't happen, and that's through living your life and enjoying your relationship and being happy, isn't it? And my word, you've put in so many tough years. You deserve that. You deserve that happiness, and you deserve to have your daughter back.
I do. You have put on, but any mammy and daddy would do it for your own way. You'd do anything for your child, Greg. You would. You know that. Yep. Any mammy and daddy that loves their wayans, you'll do anything for them. But don't enable them.
Mm.
Don't enable them.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a huge realization for me. Don't enable them.
And it's not the obvious enabling you're talking about either. It's the stuff that seems like, look, there's no electricity in the house. I have to sort something out. It's not like saying there's 50 quid. Don't spend it on drugs. You know what I mean?
No, because I wouldn't give her money. You get to that stage, you don't give her money. You'd buy her a box full of food. That's enabling. Where's her money going, Greg? To the drugs.
So I suppose finally, and, you know, Bailey at a time will speak for herself, but I suppose really I think what I think has been really valuable here is to sort of get an insight into the network of people with an addiction. And sometimes we talk about drugs, sometimes it's alcohol, sometimes it's gambling, which is, as you know, which is devastating as well. All of these are very, very prevalent in our communities, which is crazy. But your message to family and friends, you know, I know not about enabling, but just about, I suppose, What is your message? That you're not alone, that there are other people there, you know, that there are support groups?
There are other people there. It's basically to show, look, I'm on my own and I've done it. And how I learned to deal with all this was, well, you have to talk, Greg. Talking is vital. I talked to my parents, I talked to my sisters, I talked to my partner, I broke down and cried. I didn't howl at all. And I asked advice from the people that I love and trust the most, and they always come back with really good things to help me or sit with me. And so that was very important for me. That was where they helped me. But what I want parents especially to know, by you're not alone if you think that you hate your child. You don't hate them. You know, because that nearly killed me, thinking that I hated my child. I didn't.
But I think you explained it really well, in that it was almost like the egg split again, right? There was somebody else in her killing your daughter.
And she might as well basically been putting a hammer to her head every day.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're going, what? So I hated that girl for doing that to my wee boo. And I think parents out there might go, maybe don't want to admit that, you know, but you have to admit it, because I think you grow better when you realise things yourself and you admit it. And I was able to sit with it and go, right, that's all right. I hate that. I don't hate my wee boo. That was a huge realisation for me, you know. And if it works for other people, try to stop enabling the child. You know, it mightn't work for everybody, Greg, but it certainly worked in my case. And another thing that's extremely important, your child needs to really want to do it themselves.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what you do, you could stand on your head, and unless your wean wants to do it themselves, you're wasting your time and energy.
But I suppose it's keeping some line of communication open so that you're there in that moment, isn't it?
I told her that I would never give up on her, ever. But I had to stop enabling her. And I've also told her, the lines was also always told her that I would love her from afar. I couldn't watch her kill herself. I could not look at her killing herself every day. I didn't want to see her high. If she ever got herself into a wee position that she could come and talk to me or video call me. But if she video called me and I knew that she was on something, Greg, I would have said, right, Bailey, I'll talk to you later.
Okay. Well, listen, Bernadette McConnell, thank you so much. Pass on our love to Bailey as well, too, because
I will.
People listening to this will sense your love and feel your love. And there's a genuine, I'm certainly getting it. I know our listeners will, a genuine happiness that for you there is a positive end to this. Shanky Sheik. Who's Shanky Sheik?
No, Shabby Sheik.
Shabby Sheik, is it?
Shabby Sheik, Donegal State.
This is you are. Well, listen, I thought if you corrected me, you could emphasize it better. Shabby Sheik, this Shabby is on Sheik. Social media.
That's on my WhatsApp, or not my WhatsApp, my
TikTok.
TikTok. It's Shabby Sheik, Donegal Style. And the reason is Shabby Sheik is like paint work and all the nice furniture that I do, which is great for my mental health. And Donegal Style is because I'm from Donegal, so it's Donegal way.
Lovely stuff.
Donegal Style.
And I suppose wee Bailey Boo was a little tattered chair for a little while, and you were able to be there and polish it up and reupholster it. I don't mean that in any way disrespectful,
no.
But we don't give up on valuable things. Never give
you
up on the most valuable thing.
Child. Yeah. No.
Okay.
You don't give up on your child. You never give up on your child.
Bernadette, thank you so much for chatting to
us. Thank you. I hope this helps somebody, Greg.
I'm sure it will. Look after yourself.
You too. Thank you. God bless.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Greg Hughes Podcast with our guest, Bernadette McConnell. Sharing stories like these is how we break the stigma and remind every parent sitting in the dark that they are not alone. If this conversation touched you, or if you have feedback on the theme we discussed today, please reach out to our researcher and producer, Caroline Orr, at carolineorr@gmail.com. We release new episodes every Friday at 11 a.m. Until then, take care of yourselves and each other.